All right, good morning, everybody. We are going to begin our neighborhoods meeting of October 23rd. Commissioner Malakoff will be joining us shortly, and with us today we have Commissioners Samulin and what's your name again?
Whatever.
Commissioner Gongora, just kidding. A couple quick announcements. Item number six, which is the discussion regarding the smartphone police blotter, will be deferred to the December meeting. Is that correct?
Yes.
And then also I just got a note that the addendum, item number 20, has been asked to be deferred to the December meeting as well as requested by the sponsor. So, and that one was the discussion of the potential renaming of Collins Canal Park. As any other announcements, Eric?
Nope.
Okay, we are going to go a little out of order today, out of request. We have item number 8, which is the discussion regarding the Better Bus Project, which is my feeling. I think that's what everybody is here for. And we're going to take that one up first. Eric, do you want to set us up, or Milos?
Sure, I can. Good morning. Milos Mistorovic, Transit Manager for the city. The Better Bus Project is a bus system redesign that is led by Transit Alliance Miami and Miami-Dade County Department of Transportation and Public Works. It began in June of 2019 and is a two-year project, and the final plan will be voted by the Board of County Commission between February and March of 2020. It looks at complete redesign of Miami-Dade County Transit Network and includes also redesign of the municipal trolley services of City of Miami, City of Miami Beach, and Coral Gables. Transit Alliance has, in the last month, actually developed some network concept and released them, and we have a representative from Transit Alliance, Azhar, here with us this morning, and he's going to give you a brief presentation as to what the project is about and how we are affected.
Good morning, commissioners.
Jose, do you want to say any words? Or?
Okay, all right.
Morning.
Okay. Good morning, commissioners. This is a quick five-minute presentation on the Better Bus Project. So my name is Az. I'm the executive director of Trans Alliance Miami. We are an organization advocating for walkable streets, bikeable neighborhoods, better public transit. So let's skip straight to reality. The reality is that in our county, two out of three of the transit riders in our county are on buses. And actually, coming to and from Miami Beach right now, this is our only option. So it's incredibly important to focus on the reality of the system that we have and the near-term changes we can make to improve it. If you look at our county bus system, you might think that everything looks fine and dandy, but take a closer look and you might find routes like this that go in all sorts of crazy directions. You will find that only 5 county routes arrive every 15 minutes or less throughout the day, and you will find that municipal and county services have never been comprehensively planned to work together. So I'm going to tell you about the Better Bus Project, and as we think about this network, let's think about what would happen if we designed a bus network that is designed to maximize access to opportunity. So, as Milo said, we are redesigning the bus network. We are integrating the three major trolley systems, the City of Miami, Miami Beach, and Coral Gables. And we're starting from a clean slate because this system has been incredibly politicized over the past 30 years. Not so much in Miami Beach. I'm mainly referring to the county. Cities that have done this sort of exercise in the past have seen their overall transit ridership increase. These are a few of them. And as Milo says, it's a collaboration between Trans Alliance, the Department of Transportation and Public Works, municipal transportation departments, and also Jaguar and Associates, who is a national expert that have done this in cities around the world. This is also a very unique project in the way that it's funded. It's being led by Trans Alliance in partnership with you, the City of Miami, the county, funded by Microsoft, Transit Center, the Miami Foundation, the Health Foundation of South Florida, and many more. So we just completed a full evaluation of the bus system. We released a very large report. I'm only going to show you 2 slides from that report, which is the foundation of everything we're going to see today, which is the color coding of the routes. So the routes that you see in red are the routes that arrive every 15 minutes throughout the day. As we go down the colors, purple every 20, dark blue every 30, light blue every 60. This is the color scheme that we're going to use for the entire presentation. So very briefly, our highest ridership routes, they're very frequent, they run all day, they don't take lunch breaks, they're direct, and they connect people to jobs in vast quantities. I'm going to show you the network concepts, and these 2 network concepts will be used to inform the final network plan that will go to vote both here and at the County Commission. So the big question when we design any bus network, should we focus on coverage, which is spreading out our service and spreading it thin, creating somewhat circuitous routes, but reaching every corner of any fictitious place like this, or should we focus on ridership? The highest concentration of people, the highest concentration of opportunities, best possible service in direct routes that arrive very frequently. It's the balance between these 2 ideas that form the basis of a bus system redesign. And as a cost-neutral project, the question gets a bit difficult to answer. How we answer that is through a combination of data and input. In terms of data, very briefly, we know how many people get on and off at every stop in Miami-Dade County. We've mapped out everything from residential density to employment density, senior density, poverty density, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, gives you a sort of an x-ray of the county in terms of where transit would succeed the most. In terms of input, this is the part I'm going to spend a bit more time on. We did our first community survey that helped inform the concept that you see. We've done workshops and presentations for municipal and county leaders, which some of you or your aides have attended. We've done presentations around the county, including on Miami Beach. We talked to your bus operators. We talked to people at transit stops, at farmers market. The list goes on. And actually, a few days ago, we were in South Beach, and we've also been in North Beach holding a workshop where we had members of the community attend. So there's been quite a bit of engagement already, and we haven't even got to something that you're voting on in terms of alignments. So there are many other ways that people can connect with us, including a text line. People text us all the day, every day, and we have a team managing a text line all the way from virtual workshops that we're planning later in the month. And we have a community survey that's out to help us decide between these two network concepts. If you want me to, at the end of this presentation, I can give you a preview of the local responses.
Yeah.
So the two network concepts, very briefly. In November, the county is going to make a final decision on these. Your very long committee name has recommended ridership. And here's your existing network. Focus on the red lines. In the coverage network, you start to see more frequent service, but the service is still pretty spread out, still some 60-minute routes. And in the ridership concept, we focus on the most jobs, the most opportunities, how can we connect them with frequent service. I'll drop down to Miami Beach in a second. Basic countywide outcomes, the number of jobs reachable by the average resident in 45 minutes on transit, up by 33% in coverage, 51% in ridership. The number of jobs reachable by the average person in poverty in 60 minutes, up by 32,000 in coverage, 50,000 in ridership. The percentage of residents within a quarter mile of transit, which is 60% today, stays the same in coverage, drops down to 48% in ridership, so people might have a longer walk or a longer distance to access transit. I'll give you Miami Beach specific figures in a moment. The percentage of residents within a quarter mile of frequent transit, however, almost triples within the ridership concept, somewhere in between in coverage. So let's talk about Miami Beach. When we talk about Miami Beach, it's first important to recognize that when we talk about activity density, and this map is a map of activity density around the county, employment plus residential coming together, you'll see that Miami Beach has incredibly high activity density. And the more you go towards a ridership concept, these concepts are drawn based on activity density. So when we start to look at the network, on the left is the existing, in the middle is coverage, on the right is ridership. The big picture, and if you want, after the presentation, I can go in more detail. We have a system that hasn't been comprehensively designed, a lot of duplication, a lot of things that hold the system back from being incredibly useful for people, hold the system back from reaching sort of the maximum levels of usability for people who might want to abandon their cars, for example. As you start to go through the network, you'll start to see a system where Miami Beach can do the best possible local service, the county can do the best possible regional service, and it's a much more simplified network that people can actually look at and understand where they're going, because the current network, I would say, is not that. A quick example of what this can do, this is called an isochrome. It measures how far you can get in 45 minutes. This is from South Beach. I'm not going to show you all of them, just South Beach. We measure very specifically how much further and faster can people travel. This is within the coverage concept, and we measure the change in jobs and residents that are reachable, which only increases in the ridership concept. This is just South Beach. Okay, Miami Beach specific outcomes, last five or six slides. The average resident in Miami Beach within the coverage concept can access 40% more jobs in 60 minutes and 47% more jobs in 60 minutes in the ridership concept. To flip that around, though, how many residents can reach the average job location in Miami Beach, because we are an employment center as well as a residential center, goes up by 41% in coverage, goes up by 50% in ridership. In terms of seniors, the thing with seniors is that I might be able to wait at a bus stop for 20 minutes and I might have an all right time, even though I'll be quite sad about it. But seniors have a much harder time when it comes to frequency. Waiting at a bus stop for 20 minutes affects them more than it would someone like me. So the way that we frame it is in terms of frequency. Within the existing network, 73% of them are within service that comes between 11 and 15 minutes. By the time you get to ridership, that's dropped to 71% of them are within 10 minutes of a frequent service with no loss in access. So what we're asking you today is to take a position on the two concepts. For more information, you can find our website. If any of the things I mentioned in the presentation you'd like me to come back to, let me know.
Wow, you really did that in under 5 minutes.
I tried to keep my promises.
First of all, thank you for all of your work on this. I know you and I had a chance to meet, and it is absolutely, whatever we do as a city, the existing traffic network just isn't working well. And so whatever we do as a city, whether we go on coverage or ridership, which is what I think you would prefer, it's going to be better than where we're at today. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to open it up to people here to speak from the public. We'll set the timer accordingly, and then we'll have Transportation give us their recommendation and then bring it up here.
Oh, absolutely. Just as a clarification, Trans Alliance does not take a position on the concept, but the data will point you towards ridership, and I just show you the data.
No, understood. I meant our transportation department.
Absolutely. I just need to make it clear for anyone listening.
Ah, well, thank you very much for that very, very informative presentation. Commissioner Eileen Higgins, thank you for joining us today.
I'm going to speak slower than Az. So just want to give you a little bit of a sense of what we're hoping the municipalities, not just Miami Beach, but all around the county will do for us so we can be informing our decision. The maps that you've seen proposed, both coverage and riderships, are theoreticals right now. They're not actual what the final decisions would be, both from the county and, of course, from Jose and his team here at Miami Beach. What we're asking you to do is give us direction. Do you want the County Department of Transportation and Public Works to work with the City of Miami Beach and the City of Miami and the City of Coral Gables to push towards ridership? And then we're all going to, you know, we're still learning about what the routes, and you, I, by your mind, I've had opinions on what those maps look like, right, as, and I have a few changes, and I think you guys probably would have a few changes. But we're asking you to set a direction for us. Do you want to go through coverage, or do you want to go to ridership? What I can tell you, the ridership concept improves service for every resident of Miami Beach. So if I were a Miami Beach commissioner or a city of Miami commissioner, I would be voting for ridership, okay? Every resident on every street corner will benefit with that goal. Now, if I were living further west or further in the south, coverage might help me a little bit more. So I think what you can anticipate from the county is kind of a negotiated solution where we might be ridership minus or coverage plus, so that folks that live way far south and way out west continue to get some service. So I think that's probably where we'll end up. I will tell you, Miami Beach doesn't lose no matter what. Our current system essentially is delivering. Our current system isn't planned, right? Miami Beach does whatever it wants. We do whatever we want at the county level. City of Miami does whatever they want. City of Doral does what they want. City of Coral Gables does what theirs. And so when we all do what we want, we add up what we have, is we're basically running a 70% ridership model and a 30% coverage model. So even the coverage model here is actually moving towards ridership. So what they've been able to prove to us is when our five kind of big groups of us work together as if we're one system and we plan our routes together for the exact same amount of money, right? This is a cost-neutral design. No additional funding is needed. We can move towards 80% ridership, 20% coverage. So even the coverage model does better on ridership. And then, of course, the ridership model is moving towards 90%. There's going to be plenty of time for us to continue to work together to kind of narrow down what's the perfect trolley routes, what are the perfect bus routes. And then we would anticipate rolling it out probably in the June update of next year because, as you know, it takes some time to get all the apps updated and everything else. So if I were you, I'd push towards ridership. And I do think at this week's transportation material meeting, we will be trying to begin take a position at the county. Here, if you have any questions.
Yeah. Madam Chair.
Yes.
May I just ask a question? First off, thank you, Commissioner Higgins. You've been an amazing friend of Miami Beach, and you bring real-world experience in transit. So very much appreciate you being here and your perspective. One of the things that's sort of on my mind, and I think it's on our residents' mind that, you know, at some point you can address, or if you have a quick thought today, is as we sort of optimize the system of what the county does in our trolleys, which I think conceptually makes sense, there's a much greater degree of interdependency because then some of our riders might be on a county bus that used to be on a trolley. So I'm curious about how the jurisdictions would work together, how we ensure the best service for all our residents in that more interdependent way.
So right now, actually, our interlocals are very flexible. We The cities really can decide their own trolley routes, and they sort of kind of can let the county know what they're doing, but the obligations are probably not as strict. So right now, and that's, by the way, created a lot of issues, particularly in the city of Miami, right? Because the city of Miami is running trolleys where we actually have had to lower our bus service because they're just duplicative. And for example,
in our case, when you put a trolley route on a route that is mostly ridden by seniors, we're doing focus groups in all of our senior centers. We've just finished 10 in Little Havana, and we're about to start another six or seven in all the senior centers in Miami Beach, so that we make sure that the seniors have input into this process, because they're not going to fill out an online survey, and that when we make any changes, they will have felt like we've designed the routes for them, because we have to. They're transit dependent. But in the city of Miami, I'll give you an example. They've been running trolleys on routes where we've got long-distance bus services, right? And then we've had to cut service on those bus routes because we can't afford them anymore. So the idea is, if we can actually work together in a comprehensive way, the county can provide better service to you, and you can actually provide better services to your residents. And the seniors, at least on the Miami Beach side, actually hate riding the trolley. They have a very hard time getting on the trolley. They have a very hard time in the seats on the trolley, trying to pull, even just to say when the trolley's going to get out. So if they have an option for a bus, they'd rather have a bus, because our buses scoop down and get them, right? They're very comfortable to sit on if you're a senior. They're easy to move a wheelchair on. And so those are the, and bear in mind, seniors don't care about a free trolley because they ride for free anyway, right? So we need, if a bus can provide better service for our seniors, they're more comfortable, they feel more comfortable, they get on and off them. That allows the municipalities the ability to use their free trolleys with riders that don't have free service, right? Because every senior citizen is a free customer. It doesn't matter if they get on a bus or a trolley. So those are the kinds of things we can collaborate together. I actually think the collaboration's been pretty phenomenal right across the jurisdictions. And so I think it's going to be better for all of us, because we will actually, if we do this, feel obliged to tell you when we might be changing a bus route, and vice versa when you're changing a trolley route. And if you all are interested in going to the senior workshops here, we can send you the dates. We've been doing focus groups with the seniors. If more than one of you want to come, we might ask city attorney's office to sunshine those. But it's been fascinating to see where and why seniors want to go.
Thank you. And I will preface by saying, I want to repeat, these are not proposals. These are coverage concepts, ridership concepts. So, there's some tweaking, I'm sure, that's going to be done. So I know there are a lot of you here with a lot of interest on this. So I will let you come up, and then after, you'll come up and give us your recommendation and your thoughts, and then my colleagues, I know, have questions for everybody.
Sure. Thank you.
Yes, so, Ray. I'm going to have the public come in first, unless there's something.
Ray Breslin, resident Miami Beach, and two blocks from the brand new Bayshore Park that you're going to be building, there is no public transportation that goes to that park. And you should consider that now. Remember, it's not going to be time sensitive. Somebody might want to go to the park. They don't have to go necessarily at 9:30 or 10 o'clock or 1 o'clock in the afternoon, but they want to be able to get there, enjoy the park, and leave. And you need to consider that. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else from the public wish to speak? Please come up.
Hello, I'm John Guffey. I'm a resident on Belle Island. I'm here representing the Belle Island Public Transportation Alliance, which some of you are aware of. We've met with many of you, and I hope you all received an email a few days ago. I'd like to briefly read our position to you people. If I'm too slow, tell me to speed
no,
up
no,
or
no,
go
you're
away.
Fine. Don't worry about it.
What we believe, or I'll just read through this. We are in accord with the recommendations proposed by the Transit Alliance for the most part. We do not, however, concur with the recommendation to have the County A bus as Belle Isle's sole means of public transportation. We strongly feel that the elimination of trolley service to Belle Island would be a disservice to our community. Belle Island is a high taxpaying community that is stable and growing, with new construction underway right here, right now. To ask Belle Island to forfeit free transportation is blatantly unfair. 450 people on Belle Island, a fair representation of the total population, significant amount of people, two condominium boards, and the standard have requested and are continuing to request free trolley service. You should have all received those letters. I have copies with me now if you'd like more. We suggest also that it is unreasonable to expect a single stop on Belle Island to match the combined seven stops that make up Collins Park, for instance, or to reach the ridership levels of people going to South Point Park or up and down Collins or Washington Avenue. We're a single stop on an island. You know, our ridership, we believe, is reasonable for a single stop on a defined residential area. We also believe and would like to point out that it is not a duplication of service when free trolley service is offered alongside bus service, which requires a fee. They're two different things. The Collins Avenue Express runs on Collins Avenue, duplicating Miami-Dade buses. The 41st Street trolley duplicates Miami-Dade buses. The Washington Avenue trolleys duplicate Miami-Dade buses. Collins Park Extension, in part, duplicates Miami Beach buses. So we ask the question, why is a duplication of service on Belle Island a reason for elimination of free service? The Better Bus Project requires a fare of $2.25, or $4.50 for a round trip. If someone, a resident of Belle Island, wished to go to Publix to do grocery shopping, which many people use the trolley for, they would have to take the city bus to go an eighth of a mile away and pay a fare of $4.50. No other Miami Beach community is being asked to pay for public transportation in lieu of the free trolley service they are presently receiving. And we do not think that should be the case for Belle Island. The County A bus, to run that across the causeway, we note there are two drawbridges on the causeway. They're often up and down. It's an unreliable route for timing. I mean, if you can work that out, fine. But I think that's an impossible, probably a next to impossible goal. And eliminating the trolley and replacing it with the A bus, people on Belle Island are simply going to get in their cars or take an Uber. They're not going to get on the A bus to go a short distance and pay $4.50 or $9 if you're a couple. I mean, I know this isn't a lot of money, but people just will not do that. So we believe that the elimination of the trolley would not be in keeping with Miami Beach's desire to become a green city because of that increase of car and Uber use that would result from eliminating these trolleys, which of course adds to gas and parking and driving, traffic problems, all sorts of issues. And, okay, so we request, and I'll shut up now. We request commissioners continue to approve free trolley service to Belle Island, specifically continuation of the A and B trolleys with no more than a 20-minute head time. Whether you wanted to pick A or B or any other combination, 20 minutes, a 20-minute wait time and some effective way to get on and off of Belle Island for the 1,200 units there, soon to be 1,500 when the new building is completed next year.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to speak from the public? And then transportation will come in and weigh in.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Alan Hall. I live at 3 Island Avenue on Belle Isle. The population in Belle Isle is a little different than many other parts of the city, and I think we have to take that into account. We have a very stable population and a lot of people who are elderly. Many people are housebound. The transportation to us means a number of things. For example, there are a lot of caretakers that are dependent upon transportation to come into community. As John just finished saying, many people depend on the trolley for groceries, shopping, and other vital functions. I think that it is urgent that we keep the service that we have or perhaps even improve it. Because while the need ridership may not be extensive, the need is special. And those people who need it on Belle Isle have no other alternative. So I would urge you not to diminish service to Belle Isle. Thank you.
Thank you.
The other half of the team. I'm Lori Gold. I'm on at 3 Island Avenue. And not alone do we have older people, but we have many new families. We are seeing babies. We have a baby that was born just across the hall from us. That was not happening. When we moved into the building, we were among the youngest people in the building. Now, 22 years later, we are among the oldest in the building. So we've got families in need of that transportation. Having the trolley accessible to the baby carriage pushing nanny or parent, the family, it is an amenity that makes living on Belle Isle much more accessible to so many people.
Thank you.
Also, with the new building being opened, oh my goodness, imagine that increase in population as well.
Anybody else from the public wish to speak? I think we have a sense of where you're at on this. Yes, please.
Good morning, Tyler Garzo. I live at 9th and Michigan, just south of Flamingo Park. I've lived here 4 years, HOA president, just getting involved a little bit. I moved to Miami Beach for 3 reasons. It's a walkable neighborhood, perfect weather, and a world-class airport. We've got a world-class airport, but we don't have world-class transit. You don't think it's a world-class airport? So I live, work, and play on Miami Beach. I walk around, I bike around, I don't own a car. I know a lot of people in my building that don't own a car, and I talk to them about their strategies. The ridership concept being presented by Transit Alliance is of great interest to me because it expands the area of Miami-Dade County that I can enjoy via transit. It's basically a beach resident perk, and I think as, and Commissioner Higgins alluded to this, we win with the ridership concept because we as residents can go anywhere we want within these high-frequency service loops, and the labor force can come to us, which ultimately reduces our cost for various services. We can walk and bike on the beach just fine, but getting out into the county tends to be a challenge if you want to use transit. You can get across the water, but you can't go much farther. You can't even go to Cayocho without, several transfers, complexities, maybe getting on a bike. So in closing, world-class cities are not car-driving cities. And Miami Beach's master plan makes it quite clear that car drivers are at the bottom and pedestrians and mass transit are at the top. So please support Transit Alliance's ridership concept. Follow our master plan, and we'll make the beach better for everybody. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. All right, Milos, you're up.
All right, thank you. So on October 7, our Transportation, Parking, Bicycle, Pedestrian Facilities Committee did discuss this item and passed a motion in support of a ridership concept. Now I will go in quickly into changes to our trolley network that each of two concepts would be suggesting. So when it comes to North Beach Loop, that is the one that wouldn't be affected at all, so it would stay, service would stay as is. For Collins Express, no changes would be done to route alignment itself. For service frequency, coverage concept would improve service frequency from existing 17 minutes to 15 minutes, and the ridership concept would bring it down to 10 minutes. For the Middle Beach Loop, coverage concept would keep the service in place, but would eliminate route segment along 17th Street, Meridian Avenue, Dade Boulevard, and 21st Street. Now, ridership concept would take it a little further. It would eliminate the Middle Beach Loop entirely and would reassign vehicles to Collins Express in order to achieve that 10-minute service frequency. If that is done, basically, it would be expected that new County Route 20 that would be operating along 41st Street to Mount Sinai would take over that demand that Middle Beach is carrying now along 41st Street. The South Beach trolley would be mostly impacted the most with both of the concepts. So both coverage and ridership concepts, when it comes to route alignment, suggest elimination of the 11th Street loop and reassignment of vehicles that currently operate along the 11th Street loop to loops A and B so that service frequency can improve. Elimination of Collins Park extension and also Belle Isle extension. With both concepts, service frequency would be significantly improved to 12 minutes for coverage concept and 10 minutes for ridership concept as compared to existing 20-minute service frequency. Now, we as administration, we support changes to the county's redesign that would maximize access to jobs, increase ridership, make service more efficient, and to name a few recommendations that we agree with would be increasing service frequency for both South Beach Trolley Service and Collins Express, reducing duplication between the Middle Beach Trolley and also Collins Express route, eliminating the 11th Street loop of the South Beach Trolley Service and reassigning those vehicles to loops A and B, and finally eliminating Belle Isle extension and replacing service with enhanced route A. However, that would be done only and if Route A service is really improved to what both concepts suggest, which is service span would be similar to service span of our trolley service, and service frequency would be anywhere between 20 and 30 minutes. There is also alternative to that, which could be that we could provide service at no cost to Belle Isle if we were to implement freebie type of service that would simply connect Belle Isle to Sunset Harbor Public's at no cost to passengers, where passengers could simply transfer to any of the South Beach loops and operate to Sunset Harbor Publics. Now, while we support both concepts, there are a couple of key issues that we have pointed out in here, and some of the residents already pointed them out as well. One of them is fare. What was that? For both concepts.
Okay.
For both concepts, and particularly, I would say, as it relates to Belle Isle, is for both concepts. As it relates to Middle Beach and Collin, actually, Middle Beach, it would be a ridership concept. So one of the things is that really to achieve this intended goal of Better Bus Project, we would have to redesign the entire county network together with the local and municipal networks. Everything would have to be done concurrently in order to achieve for synergies in the transit network. The second one is fares. Given that our citywide trolley service operates without a fare, some of the areas that would be affected and that would be losing trolley service now, those passengers would have to pay a fare to conduct their trips. Example is Belle Isle. And transfers and walking distance, which means but basically eliminating segments of city's existing trolley routes, will require that some residents transfer from trolley to bus and vice versa, and that some of them would have longer distances in order to conduct their trips. So people would have to change the way that they're traveling around the city. So it might involve a little more transfers. However, transfers are not seen as any bad experience as long as, you know, routes that you're transferring from and to operate at high service frequency.
Okay. Commissioners? So I just want to understand. I understand that staff's conclusion is almost like a hybrid of the two. So is it a coverage plus or is it a ridership minus?
Well, we don't really have a recommendation. We are agreeing with is that moving towards coverage concept or ridership concept would be absolutely improvement. So anything that we do to change an existing transit network and to move towards even coverage concepts at a minimum would be an improvement. Now, there are key issues,
right,
again,
and
that we pointed out.
I think really the issue that we're going to be, I think everybody agrees with the four staff-supportive recommendations with the exclusion of, I think, the one that we have to discuss is the Belle Isle extension today, I think. Yes.
Just a question.
Yes.
Because as I read the item, administration doesn't really make a recommendation on the two models that are presented, which is the subject title. We kind of like get into changing the trolleys, which is an item that actually I thought was deferred to December at Neighborhoods Committee, again, bringing in the Belle Isle extension, which kind of is the one that always becomes contentious. Is there anything in your conclusion about the Better Bus Project, or is it just these simple bullet points with regard to changing our own trolley routes?
In reference to Better Bus Project altogether, there is really nothing in regards to the entire effort altogether. We see it as a very positive change, as something that would really improve mobility countywide and to our city, and within our city there would be significant improvements in service frequency and connectivity between the mainland and the city, as well as along north-south corridor as it relates to the entire project. So we would be significantly benefiting if the project is to go forward now as it relates to our trolley service. As I said, no recommendation from our end. We're just pointing out, you know.
You're just basically telling us either way, either the coverage or the ridership is better than the existing plan today.
Correct.
We want to make sure we're part of an integrated system that works more efficiently countywide. So, again, that's why I was trying to understand with your recommendations, was that a hybrid of the two? And you're saying yes. So, Commissioner Malikoff?
I think it's important that whatever happens, Belle Isle, with the population of 450 and growing because there's new buildings going up, it's very important that they still have trolley service. I don't believe bus service is adequate. Even though many are senior citizens, there are also many young families there that aren't going to get, you know, a golden passport. That's why we put a playground in Belle Isle, because the young families, that population is growing. I agree that I think we should coordinate with the county, and I think Eileen Higgins has shown a tremendous interest in helping Miami Beach, more so than many years past. I don't remember ever seeing our former county commissioners here as often as she's here and helping the city of Miami Beach. So I just want to thank publicly Eileen Higgins, because I won't be here at the next neighborhoods meeting. I think that the other thing that's sort of been lost in the shuffle is any kinds of bus service, county bus service, to the Middle Beach area, where we used to take a bus to go to high school, for instance, from the homes in the 40s, 50s, 60s of Pine Tree or LaGorse. That bus service either has disappeared or it's so irregular that people can't use it. And I'm not sure why the bus service stopped altogether, but both household help, aides, school children no longer have that bus service. And I'm not sure whether that can come back or whether the ridership was just so low that the county decided to cut it because it wasn't enough. But now there's nothing, and neither is there trolley service in Middle Beach.
So to answer your question, Transit Alliance with the county as part of this Better Bus Project did look into Middle Beach area, and the service that currently provides public transit service out there is 115, Route 115, which operates at very low service frequency of approximately 60 minutes. So every 60 minutes, meaning if you miss a bus, you're waiting another, basically 2 hours. Now, a coverage concept is suggesting keeping that route in place at the same service frequency, right, of 60 minutes. Ridership concept would eliminate it altogether. The reason why is exactly very low ridership. Now, what we did on our end, we recognize that there is no reliable transportation option out there.
No coverage.
That is correct. So what we did on May 31st, we implemented on-demand transit service pilot program in the Middle Beach area that serves exactly the entire area north of Dade Boulevard and south of 63rd Street. That pilot is still in place. It's going to run until end of the year. As a pilot, we will reevaluate the data and come back to City Commission.
The freebies you're talking about?
That is correct. That is correct. And actually, it provides better service because it's really door-to-door, and the wait time is no longer than 15 minutes. So if you request the ride, you shouldn't be waiting more than 15 minutes to receive a ride.
So I just have a question.
Thank you.
To follow up. 60-minute wait time.
Yes.
So how do we know the chicken and the egg? Is it that the low ridership is not, the demand's not there, and that's why it's a slower mode 60-minute wait? Or is it because it's such an unreliable long wait that ridership fails to, you know, use it and utilize it the way it should?
So the answer is that this area, that 115 service is basically a single-family residential with a very low residential density and very low job density. So really determinants for ridership would be job and population density.
Understood.
So the point is right about low service frequency, but even if the service frequency was double, ridership potential just wouldn't be there. So it wouldn't be really
good
business decision to run fixed route service where there is no ridership.
Understood. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Samuel.
Yep, thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is a great project. Buses are the primary form of public transportation. I think the Transit Alliance done a wonderful job at showing us a community-driven, data-driven approach. I think the primary issue before us is this ridership versus coverage, and from what Commissioner Higgins said, what our Transportation Committee said, I believe the ridership is preferred. I think Miami Beach benefits. I think it leads to routes where the people are and areas that we give service. So if that's the key question to me, I think it is about the ridership. Now, we're going to have to look at our individual neighborhoods like Belle Isle and make sure they're going to be treated fairly. And finally, I just sort of want to highlight some of the implementation issues we're going to deal with, whether we need to think about moving bus stops, how we're going to coordinate with the county moving forward. This is going to call for a greater degree of interdependency, and I know that's not today's discussion, but I would encourage staff to work with the Transit Alliance to really ferret some of that out. But for today's decision of recommending to the county, because I think ultimately they make the decision, I land on the ridership side.
Okay. Commissioner Gongora?
Right. Thank you. I think there have been excellent comments up here by my colleagues. So first of all, to the people from A Better Bus Project, thank you for really getting out in the community and putting this together and driving this item forward and meeting with all of us and our residents to come up with a new plan. And yes, thank you to Commissioner Higgins for being here. I do think that we've had a very good relationship with the county, which we never used to see in the past, where the county would program its buses and we would program what was then our South Beach local and became our trolley, all kind of independently of each other. So I love this idea of really looking at everything holistically. I'm not a traffic expert, but it does appear that those that have looked at this more carefully, that are perhaps a little bit more in tune, are suggesting the ridership model. So I'm fine with recommending that and hopeful that the county will move forward in that direction. My point earlier about the trolleys is we're going to have to move our trolley routes, assuming the county incorporates this. And I'm fine with the suggestions, but the point that I made earlier, like Belle Isle is contentious. It hasn't just come here today. It's come here half a dozen times to Neighborhoods Committee. So it always seems that there's a way to work on this. I would not be in favor of eliminating the trolley route to Belle Isle as part of this project. So whatever motion we make, and I'll make it to support the ridership model except for the elimination of the trolley on Belle Isle.
Okay, Commissioner Malakoff, there's a motion.
I second it.
Yes, do you want to come up?
If I could respond to 4 points very quickly in 2 minutes or less.
Yes. Okay, but don't speak as quickly as you did the first time around.
That time I had five, now I have two. First of all, I'd like to commend the department for their incredible level of collaboration with the project, for really stepping forward to be humble and recognize that change can be good, change can be possible. So I'd just like to make that very clear. The second point is I'd like to give you a preview of the 137 responses we've received so far to the survey, isolated to Miami Beach. Everyone who comes to a workshop fills in a survey. Everyone we meet at the transit terminal fills in a survey. That is the main vehicle of engagement. So the first question is, should we change the bus system from a scale of 1 to 5? In Miami Beach, it's 4.4. People do want to change the bus system. Which concept do you prefer? 1 being coverage, 5 being ridership. It's 3.8, which is higher than the county average by 0.2. Should we change the trolleys to integrate them with the bus system better? I'm shortening the questions a little bit, but this is what they get to. From a scale of 1 to 5, the answer is 4.2. So that's point number two, just to give you some additional context, because the point of transit planning is never for the loudest voices that may happen to be in the room. It's the voices that cannot come to a commission meeting at 10:30 in the morning. Number three, the interdependency. I think without interdependency, that is the disservice to transit riders. Because I, as a Miami Beach resident, I pay taxes to Miami Beach and the county. Yet, I have transit services that don't work together. I'm paying double taxes for a duplicative service. So as transit riders, that's the perspective. Because transit riders, without that cooperation, we ride one system. We don't ride 25. We ride one. Now, in terms of Belle Isle, which I think I'll spend the last 45 seconds on, I think Belle Isle is a victim of geography. When you have a circular loop, the more extensions you create to it make the circle less useful for everyone who's traveling in that circle. For example, like north of Sunset Harbor or other islands, you could send the trolley there too. There are many islands you could send trolleys to. But it's just a matter of geography and route design that creating that extension to Belle Isle within a loop makes the loop yet less useful for everyone else. And the point of public transit is to create the most possible usage for the most amount of people. You will always have people and neighborhoods and places that, because of low residential density, because of geography, might not fit within that paradigm. And I think that's the greatest challenge as elected officials. And again, for Belle Isle, I think there is an alternative solution other than trolley service that might be more effective. But the benefits, and it's not just Belle Isle, again, it's Collins Park. The benefit to creating a proper loop is that it's far more useful for far more people. And those voices may not generally are not recognized in the room. So thank you very much. I appreciate
the
time.
So can I respond?
Please.
I just wanted to answer you about Belle Isle. There aren't other islands that were asking for trolley service. The reason that Belle Isle is unique is it's the only one that has high rises.
Right.
It's multifamily. The other islands are all single family residential, just like Pine Tree and LaGorse or Alton that we talked about or I asked about previously, about the lack of bus service. But the reason Belle Isle needs it is that there's so many people living on that island because it's a multifamily island.
Correct. And also, I would like to emphasize that within both concepts, with the loop going every 10 minutes, the residents of Belle Isle are still, depending on your walking speed, between 3 and 5 minutes, and depending on your location within Belle Isle, actually, between 3 and 7 minutes from actually trolley service. Replacing walking trips with transit trips is not something that either concept aims to do. And I know that for some people, that walk might be difficult, and it might even be not possible. But that's why the county-city cooperation is so important, is that they still have a service that takes them actually a longer distance than the trolley did in the first place.
Okay,
so this was thought out quite a bit, so I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Thank you. So what, as I understand it, the motion is to move with a favorable recommendation the ridership concept provided staff continues to work on tweaking, maybe giving them the flexibility to make their recommendations and inform what the ridership could look like. Mm-hmm. And you wanted to, for this time, bifurcate out the Belle Isle extension.
Right. Take out the elimination of the Belle
Isle.
I
understand what the motion was.
And also, we're not here today to actually decide the exact stops. I know
this is going
to
change a few times.
Collins Park is also upset about some eliminations. I think we're endorsing the concept of the ridership plan. We're not actually determining the specific trolley stops that are going to be there or be eliminated or wait times. That will be determined at another time for those neighborhoods.
Okay, so by acclamation.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, Commissioner.
No, I completely agree with you, Commissioner Gongora, because even on the county bus side of things, I have comments and changes. Other commissioners have comments and changes. So you're really just setting a direction for us. You are not selecting your trolley routes, and we, with setting the direction, will not be setting the bus routes. We still have several months' worth of work. And, by the way, the community engagement meetings aren't stopping with this vote, right? I'll be at Unidad on Monday. So we will be continuing to inform that decision. So it's really direction we need, recognizing that we may do lots of little tweaks to the trolley changes, including Belle Isle.
Okay.
If I may add just one more thing. So in addition to suggested modifications to trolley routes, we wanted to point out one of the changes that would be impacting us in connection to county's network, and particularly Route 150, which currently provides direct service from Miami Beach to the airport. So Route 150 would be replaced in both concepts by new Route 20 that would allow for workers and residents to make new frequent connections to Miami Beach directly from the airport. However, it wouldn't be operating anymore along Julia Tal. It would be going down on MacArthur Causeway. And the reason why is, if I'm not mistaken, Route 150 has a very low ridership and very low productivity, and it has a very high cost. I believe that the route costs county approximately 2% of the overall budget. So rather than, and it's very limited transit market. So if there are any more questions, Az can elaborate.
Everything
on
is dependent on something else. The, right. The airport route, right now that's on 41st Street. If we do get the express bus or rapid bus or whatever it's going to be called on 41st Street on the Julia Tuttle,
that is right.
That would be a very good place to get people from Miami Beach to the airport and from the airport to Miami Beach
sure.
rapidly. The ridership would go up.
Sure.
The slower that the route is, the less people ride it.
All right. We're going to move this to the commission for,
sure.
A final vote on the concepts. But, you know, between now and then, you may want to sit down with everybody and explain to them. And if you have any concerns about losing any coverage based on the ridership model, please let us know so
sure.
that we can make sure that we put that as part of our motions.
Sure. Yes. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all for coming out today. Now, we are going to jump to number one. Cleanliness in Miami Beach. Commissioner Gongora, can you explain what it is your item is?
Cleanliness?
Yes.
Well, for this month, I think we gave some instruction at the last Neighborhoods Committee meeting, and Commissioner Higgins may want to stay for this item because we gave some instruction about focusing on beach cleanup because that was such a huge problem that we were facing at a critical point that time. So as I understand it, our administration is going to give us an update specifically on the beach cleanup and sargassum and kind of a success story that we were able to have here as part of this month's presentation.
Absolutely. Happy to be here. John Ripple, Beach Maintenance Director for the City of Miami Beach. Commissioners, Assistant City Manager, and Commissioner Higgins, thank you very much for being here as well. You were very instrumental in these accomplishments. But seaweed typically begins in April of each year, becomes heavier May, June, and July. For the past couple of years, it's been much heavier than usual in prior years. The county continued their practice of blading the seaweed at the waterline, which is a turning of the seaweed into the sand. And then as the waves hit it, that seaweed typically sinks into the sand. And by midday, you don't see it, of course, until the next tide comes in. Sifting of the upper beach always continues, and they pick up all kinds of litter, trash, and debris. With the large amounts of seaweed arriving, old methods proved fruitless. The blading of the seaweed, the blades would get bogged down with the weight of the seaweed. It wouldn't bury under the sand. It became quite obvious through May, June, and July with the attempts of continuing to blade that removal of seaweed in certain hot spots or certain areas where it was very, very heavy was a necessity. And these were the accumulation both on, depending on the direction of the winds, north and south of the rocks at 29, 30, and 32. Also at South Point Park, if the winds were from the northwest, it would accumulate there. And Bell Harbor, if to the southeast. So the county identified those areas and brought in beach raker starting in August of 2019. They began removing seaweed. This, at first, left very dark traces of old seaweed, which were quite unsightly, and there were a couple of comments made by residents about, you know, when is this going to go? And we didn't realize that this was going to be the result. But they were assured that it's going to be taken care of, it's going to disappear. The nearshore waters returned. Residents waited patiently for the white sandy shoreline, and over a period of time, with a combination of continued cleaning, rainwater, which actually washed it down, and the surf, in early September, we had a beautiful white shoreline, and They were very happy to see their beaches return. I must give credit to all of the photos in this presentation that you have. And I'm sorry that the PowerPoint didn't run.
It's up now.
That's quite all right. Well, if they would wish, they can just go right through them, because I've commented on each one of them. But for those people at home, they'd be able to take a look and see those. This is where we were. This is what we've come to. And it wasn't through cooperative efforts, city, county, Commissioner Higgins. The efforts in her office were tremendous. She got us a lot of help. Residents admired the beach, all the emails that came through with photographs attached, and I might say that the photographs I've attached here that you have are from residents. So they saw the heavy seaweed. That's when the complaints came in, and when photos like this began coming in from residents, it was obvious, saying, thank you for giving us our beach back. The volumes of collection in August, the month of August, 1,240 cubic yards, September, 1,124, and in October, 205, but that's only for half of the month. Now, the efforts will continue by Beach Raker through the county as the contractor to remove seaweed through the end of this month. Then they will cease, and the county will continue providing service with blading the seaweed, which, by the way, has worked in all of the areas that have not been identified as hotspots. So it's a process that does work. It just doesn't work when the seaweed is so heavy. Furthermore, to look at what's coming in the future, seaweed the county has a current budget increase to beach maintenance of $2.8 million for next year, and this is for the removal of seaweed. Also, Commissioner Jimenez is creating a seaweed task force to identify pilots on, you know, just how to best deal with that problem. Two crews are being added, one on days, one on weekends, and funding to replace equipment that's very aged. If you have any questions, be happy to respond.
Commissioner Gongora, this is your item.
Does anybody want to speak on the item?
I just want to say thank you.
You forced me to be here for this. You're welcome. Yes, we're so happy that the residents are happy. I just wanted to let you know, last night met with Army Corps of Engineer on the beach renourishment programs that are scheduled to be starting in November. And I had thought they were going to be starting at the 26th Street renourishment first in November, and we were kind of shocked, all of us from the county, from Durham, that it had been reversed, that would be scheduled for March, April, and May. So I did have discussions with them. I asked them to look very carefully at that, because if they're not out of there by April, we could theoretically have the seaweed coming back by then. And so they are going to go back and see if there's anything they can do to accelerate it. I realize that, you know, those areas are also a big part of Art Basel and others, and so we're working with event season, but made it pretty clear that we can't have that delay into June, because by June there'll be days they're not going to be able to we can't be doing beach renourishment on top of seaweed.
Right.
The beach has to be clean for them to do that. So stay tuned. We probably should. And Elizabeth Wheaton was there also last night. So I think we're all on the same page of attempting to accelerate that if we can, just because I am afraid the seaweed will be back and it will slow down beach renourishment. And that part of the beach is, in my opinion, the skinniest right now. So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for the presentation. Certainly. I don't think there's more to say on it other than thankfully this was a success story where the county and the city were able to collaborate and really come in and address a problem that our city was facing. And it appears that for the time being, at least, this is not a critical problem. So with that said, I'm ready to move forward. This is a quarterly item, so we won't be discussing cleanliness again until a meeting in 2020. But I would like to take it back to its original intended purpose. We kind of veered off to beach cleanup because it was such a big problem this summer. But when it comes back, I'd really like to focus on cleanliness of our streets and walkways and sidewalks and the issues that we typically get complaints about at the commission level.
Very good. Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Item number two. Discussion regarding levies fined against properties and a policy decision as to when the city should potentially move forward with foreclosure proceedings. Alex or Eric? Oh.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning.
Morning. Go for it.
Oh, okay. Subsequent to our last discussion, actually, good morning, Madam Chair and commissioners and members of the board. Commissioner Alamon had severe concerns about some of the properties in Mid-Beach in the Alton Road, North Bay corridor. And she had asked that we look into them and try to update and figure out what was going on, especially the problematic property at 5960 Alton Road, which was the one that had the fire on the second floor. It was chained in fence and some top on the outside. So subsequent to the last meeting, I was able to reach out to the property owner, and he immediately retained counsel. And I'm pleased to let the committee know that the building department did issue a violation for what was an unsafe structure, and it turns out engineer reports have been submitted. So the property is more likely than not going to be demolished within 60 days. They're just remaining, taking out some personal effects. So that particular property seems to have, by reaching out and contacting them, has created an issue, a positive issue, where we're getting some movement. Another one of the properties that the commissioner was concerned about was 4766 North Bay Road, and that was in the process of a bank foreclosure with J.P. Morgan Chase. They were the successful bidders at the property. That building was also, or that residence, was a structure for illegally dividing up the home into essentially a hotel. So it is coming down. It has been demolished. The city demolished it with J.P. Morgan's permission and consent, and now they're being billed for that. So we have a beautiful oceanfront, or bayfront lot, with a final demolition. So we've accomplished two structures. One of the structures at 4465 Walton Road, which is also a subject of neighborhood complaints, I've been in contact with the buyer and the seller of the property to resolve certain issues, but that's under contract for sale, and the intention of the buyer is to completely demolish the building, which is falling down and is in a state of disrepair, and build another home on there. And the fourth property in the area that we were asked to look at is 5757 Alton Road, and that property is in the subject of a bankruptcy proceeding. On behalf of the city, I filed the proof of claim, and we actually have a hearing coming up in 2 weeks to determine the value of the collateral, because I believe it's going to be under contract to sale, because it's no longer needed in the bankruptcy proceeding. So some of the problematic properties, as code refers them over to our office, we're able to look into, and we've made substantial progress on some of the other properties. Tom's here with some statistics, but we've cleared up 19 of properties that do have liens on them.
Right. Yes, Eric.
How many more are there?
I believe there's somewhere in the 80s. From 109, we're down to the mid-80s.
Before we jump into Tom's update on where we stand with this, the sponsor of the item had emailed me this morning saying that I will not be at the Neighborhood and Community Affairs Committee for item number two. Please read this email into the record. The committee should decide how it wants to proceed. The Alton Road HOA originally brought this item to my attention, as there are single-family homes that have been abandoned and are in disrepair, sometimes dangerous condition. These homes continue to incur fines for code violations. Some have been accumulating for 20 years or more and presently exceed the value of the house. Abandoned homes cause several issues for the community, including public safety, potential health hazard, negative property value impact on neighborhood, negative quality of life impact on neighbors. I would ask the committee to entertain identification of the most egregious situations and directing the city administration to make a recommendation on each. That concludes her email, but I think Tom can tell you that since the last time we had this conversation at Neighborhoods, we have kind of jumped on some of these most egregious properties, and Tom, you want to give an update on where we stand?
Yes, hi. Tom Curat.
It's on.
Tom Curator, Assistant Director of Code Compliance. We originally had 102 properties on the list. We're down to 83 now. We worked with the city attorney's office on 19 of the properties, and we'll continue to work on them, the ones that are the most problematic in the area.
Okay.
Are we collecting these past due fines on these properties?
Yes, some of them are still eligible for mitigation, and they've gone back of those that have been resolved that Tom indicated. They go back to the special master, and then it's within the discretion of the special master under Chapter 30 whether or not to mitigate or reduce the fines. For the most part, they are not face value fines, but rather are subject to mitigation.
Negotiation.
Once they're in compliance, yeah. Though.
I understand, but it seems to me if the house is demolished, well, one of them you mentioned the bank is paying for it. Is the city paying for the demolition of these houses?
For a city demolition like 4766, yes, but it's being leaned to the bank, and the bank is paying it.
Okay.
For those that are not city demolitions but a private demolition, prior to getting the demolition permit, all outstanding city fines and bills need to be.
That was my question.
Yes. So that's how we catch the outstanding fines, city bills. For example, some of the city bills on the 4766 are also boarding up and securing, and those are collected upon the issuance of the demolition permit. Okay. When it was a city permit, we obviously didn't pay for somebody else's bills,
right.
But a private one, yes, they're collected at that time.
Good. All right. And how do we stand on the 83 that are still out there? What are we doing to collect the fines or to... if necessary, get the unsafe structures bored out to see them?
What's happening is Tom has been sending me a list of properties, and I've been going through them, and I can identify certain ones that are either in litigation or current foreclosures. So I'm going through them one by one to try to ascertain what's the best course for our office to handle as far as monitoring the foreclosure proceedings or reaching out like 5960 and just finding out who owns it and what are your intentions with this property.
Good. If you could do that for 83 properties, I think our list would go way down. Thank you very much.
So what do you guys want to do?
I think you should keep this on your calendar for future neighborhood meetings.
Okay, Eric?
The only thing I would offer is if there's something that you want us to prioritize out of the 83, then that would be helpful. If you want us to prioritize, you know, abandoned single-family homes or non-homesteaded properties or people above a certain fine limit, any of those guidelines would be helpful for us to prioritize which ones to tackle first.
Certainly abandoned single-family homes. I would say that's at the top of the list. And the second would be the non-homesteaded properties.
Okay. All right.
Fine. I'll second.
All right.
Thank you.
And then since Commissioner Alamon will not be able to continue sponsoring this item, Commissioner Gongora, do you want to pick it up?
Sure, I'll pick it up.
All right. Thank you.
How often are we bringing it back? Quarterly?
Quarterly.
Okay.
All right. Number three. Okay, my item. Spray-painted markings left on sidewalks. So just to give everybody an understanding why I put this on, and by the way, thank you, staff, for giving us such an in-depth background.
Things we never knew.
On, you know, what each of the colors actually indicate, the type of coat they use, whether it's oil paint or spray paint or chalk, the length of time everything has to stay. So I encourage everybody to read it if they haven't had a chance to read it. But I don't know about you all, but I receive complaints all the time about this. What?
Yeah. I do, too.
Right.
And I think oil paint should be outlawed.
Okay. Well, we can come up with some motions. No. But I think there are ways and things that I think we could – listen, this is one of those instances, again, where we're somewhat preempted by the state legislature. Just another – another wonderful thing that they give us, another gift, the gift that keeps on giving. But there are things I think we could potentially do in our power. And if there's anything you think that we could encourage and have these contractors voluntarily maybe work with us, some recommendations you might have for us, and it doesn't have to be right now. This is not something that I want to just say, okay, we're going to move off. I really want to work together and try to find a way that we can incentivize some of this street art maybe to diminish in our city. We have so much going on for us, and it just really degrades the entire area when you just see like spray painting everywhere and oil painting everywhere, and no one understands what the signs or what the what that means. And then sometimes they're there for 6 months, sometimes a year,
sometimes forever.
What do you guys think?
No, I agree. I just, in reading the item, it seems that there's a lot of limitations as to what we can do.
I know. I was hoping we could work with our contractors to have them voluntarily proffer maybe using different materials, maybe, I don't know, are we allowed to fine if they're left on our streets for more than a certain time?
Commissioner, no, actually, you were right earlier. Chapter 556 specifically preempts us from requiring specific paints, types, or cleaning. So if we could work for a voluntary solution, that's a challenging one because it is so many different contractors involved. Each underground utility owner has their own marking protocols, and certainly it couldn't hurt for us to reach out and make that attempt. But if we believe that this matter rises to a high enough priority, maybe an appropriate action would be take it to our goals conference and see if we want to make it a legislative priority to seek some specific legislation for our city to allow us to do some type of controls. But as it stands now, each time that we talk to some of the bigger contractors, they just point to the state law and say, just follow the law, and they've not been very receptive. They
right, and that's the problem. It's they're taking advantage, and so then we're stuck almost having to clean it up because we get so many complaints. The work is finished, but the markings are still there, and then you get the phone calls, and then Public Works has to go out there and repaint, or it's costing our taxpayers more money. All right, goals conference.
Do we have any... Can we ask, as the chair said, can we ask the utilities, et cetera, voluntarily not to use the oil-based paint that lasts for years and years, at least the water-based? It's long-lasting depending on weather conditions, but it doesn't live forever on the sidewalks.
And we certainly can, and we're very willing to try to have some industry meetings to do that. But just to give it in perspective,
I know
we've had some of these communication contractors just say we don't have any authority and refuse to even come to Public Works and address it with us. They just refuse and walk on. So we may get some help out of some, but I wouldn't expect it out of all.
All right. Let's move that we do that voluntary communication, and we also move the issue to the goals conference.
Perfect. Item number 4.
Thank you. I referred this item because I started getting emails about the configuration of the intersection at Pine Tree and 26 in front of the Scott Raykow Youth Center. Specifically, you know, it's complicated because it's such a wonderful center. People want their kids to go there. You have the ice skating rink, the bowling alley, the pool, everything going on. But it's not exactly easy to get there by foot. There's people making illegal U-turns often to get in or out. So I had asked administration to look at this, and they can tell us what they found.
Good morning. Joseph Ferrer, Assistant Director, Transportation Department. So we did take a look at this intersection. This is quite a cumbersome intersection because of the curvature on Pine Tree Drive. Also, there is pedestrian demand. One of the things that we found as well, given the curvature of the road, there is no crosswalk on 28th Street to get across Pine Tree, which a lot of students from Beach High use to get over to Indian Creek because the bridge aligns on Flamingo Drive. So we went out there. We took a look at just the conditions in general, and we also looked at some accidents. We did not see a number of accidents in the from a curvature perspective like we've seen in the northern side of Pine Tree that may indicate that we have a massive issue with speeding or people going off the road. But we did identify a number of deficiencies, what we consider deficiencies in terms of the walkability and potential safety issues of the intersection, which are listed in your memo. Our recommendation, because Pine Tree Drive is a county road, our recommendation is that the committee recommend that we formally engage the county via a letter and then continue to work with them to perform an actual study of the intersection to come up with alternatives that may be more conducive to the walkability and the safety of the intersection.
Unless there's any questions from the committee, I'd make a motion that we approve staff's recommendation, submit the formal request to Miami-Dade County to do the traffic study considering these factors, and also add that we also reach out to the Bayshore Neighborhood Association, which is part of this, to see if they have any recommendations since we've been working with them so much on the other traffic calming measures.
I second the motion, but I have a question.
Sure.
Why, Commissioner Gongora, I know you said you got emails about this, but staff knows about this problem. Why does it have to come to Neighborhoods Committee before you take steps to put in a crosswalk or other ways to make it safer?
Commissioner,
why does it have to come to a committee first?
No, we have been working with the county for some time on this and submitting different requests to the county in terms of collecting data as well as placing a crosswalk on 28th, taking a look at the intersection in general. Previously, certain items have been denied. I think it's the time to, given that the youth center also has the parking lot there, which wasn't there before, I think the character of the intersection has changed some, and as such, I think it's time to do a more holistic approach, perhaps take a look at, you know, changing the configuration of the intersection completely. But there have been, over time, there have been a number of requests sent to the county for improvements at the intersection.
Thank you.
All right, by acclamation.
Thank you.
All right. Item number 5. Discussion regarding the policies and procedures. Relating to evictions. Maria, thank you. Yes, this is an important one.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good, thank you.
Marie Ruiz, Director of Housing and Community Services. As you know, a couple months back, we had a resident who received an eviction notice and was evicted right before Hurricane Irma. That's what led us to kind of look at what we were doing in terms of our cooperation and collaboration with the county in the issuance of eviction orders. Even though we have provided flyers to the courts going back to when we first received funds, I want to say back in 2003, the county has a form that it lists all of the countywide providers for rent and emergency assistance, as well as 311, which is the countywide information number that you can call, and then you can ask and see what resources are available in my neighborhood, which we are registered with 311. In fact, we update every year the resources that we have available. So what we have done since this incident is we've continued to provide updated flyers in English and Spanish, since the issue that kind of drove this was the fact that the court order was actually done in English and the person didn't understand English. But we provided flyers in English and Spanish at the courthouse. In addition, we actually have a network of community providers that we work with to kind of raise awareness that we have these resources, including the emergency shelter option, because by the time you get your 24-hour court order, rent assistance is not going to assist you. You're going to need to be able to have a place to stay until you get back on your feet. So we've reached out to all of our church partners. We've reached out to all of the schools in the feeder pattern, as well as the parish-related schools within the city. And we've given them also the same information regarding our emergency rent assistance and our eviction assistance for emergency shelter. What we find is that it's a lot easier for us if we get the people as soon as they get a 3 or 5 day court order before they get the sheriff knocking on their door. So we've made a really concerted effort to make sure that information about our pre-assistance is available. because that's really when it's the most humane way to be able to provide assistance. But we have also now added on our list of things to do to make sure that those flyers at the courthouse are replenished on a regular basis so that they're always available at all times here at the Miami Beach Courthouse. They're English and Spanish. We make them both now and make sure that there's copies of both at the courthouse.
Thank you. Yeah, no, this is a very important item. I know there's legislation now working its way through Tallahassee. what would you like for us to do in terms of this? Because I'm happy to pick it up as a sponsor. I'm sure you are, or you, or anybody.
I think the challenge is that when a court order eviction is signed anywhere in the county, they have one form which covers all of the countywide agencies that provide assistance plus 311. And truly through 311, residents are going to find us if they're going to look for us. The challenge is going to be making sure if the court is willing to either add us to that flyer, because it's a pretty busy flyer the way it is now, or to potentially add a flyer that we would be more than glad to provide to the court ordered evictions that occur within our jurisdiction. And that way people have that information at the time that they're served.
Okay. Yeah, Michael.
This is such a big item because it was in the press, you know, during the face of what we thought was potentially a hurricane, that this poor person was evicted and removed from her property. And you're right, the state, there's bills filed to prevent this. I know that the county took action at a meeting that they're not going to execute these writs of possession anymore if there's a hurricane watch or a hurricane warning. So I guess we're doing our final piece, which is letting them know that we have resources available if you're being evicted. So I think it's great. Again, this is something that we're going to either we're going to have to ask them, include our information when you're putting out these eviction papers in Miami Beach. So I'm not sure there's anything further for us to do unless you would like to just authorize a rezo that we would like the county to include this information in eviction packages, which I'm happy to co-sponsor with you.
Let's do that. Great.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Okay. And the last and final item, item number 7, Beachwalk Medallion.
It's kind of a low-energy neighborhoods meeting today.
Good morning, commissioners, Mr. Assistant City Manager, David Gomez with the Office of Capital Improvement Projects. I like to think that you guys saved the best item for last.
Yes, there
so
you go.
I'm kind of like dessert at the end of a meal with the good news.
Oh.
The update for the Mid-Beach Recreational Corridor is that for Phase 3, which is the portion from 25th to 45th, there are 11 street ends which will receive medallions with the street numbers. I don't know if you guys have seen the detail for the numbering. I have a copy of it here just in case. I can ask Adrian to give you an update on the existing locations and where those are missing.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So we had folks go out to the beach walk and identify locations where there are currently no street markings or medallions. And what we found is the areas are about 35. So you have about 35 locations or street ends that require it. We did receive the specs that are being implemented as part of the Mid-Beach Corridor. So now it's just a process of trying to piece that together, put a cost behind it, and then move forward perhaps with a phasing plan and a funding plan, really, which we don't have right now.
Okay.
So we're going to put together a project to revamp the areas that don't have it. That's where we are right now. We don't have the funding identified, so we the first thing we did is go out to take a look, and at some point, whether we could do it mid-year or for fiscal year 21, we would put something together to...
Okay, so what do you need from us?
This is just an update. We would...
Right, there's an update on whether we should move forward, I guess, and include these beachwalk medallions in areas we've already built, right?
Well, no.
We get a lot of requests from folks wondering where they are in the beach. Okay. Where
it's
exactly
important
are we?
Street ends, so they know where they are.
And because they've already been added, it makes sense to continue doing the rest of the beach walk.
We all agree.
In our opinion.
The question is, how soon can you do it, number one? And number two, the elevated beach walk, has that come down yet?
We have just signed the contract with the contractor. They should be. We should be issuing NTP 2 to begin construction very beginning of November. So they will go in and begin demolition at the beginning of
the boardwalk.
And when
for the boardwalk,
yeah.
Right? Okay.
When will the beachwalk be installed?
It's all one contract.
Correct.
The entire process is 14 months. The entire schedule is 14 months from beginning of demolition to completion of the beachwalk.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So what we're going to do then? Thank you for the update, and I guess we'll see it as a budget amendment either mid-year or alternatively in next year's budget.
Yeah, and we will work with our budget department whether we can, obviously we need to know what the costs are and right. where we can source
is
these materials.
Is this an item that's at finance?
It is not. I don't believe it is not.
Okay, but I don't think it would trigger that, would it?
If we go mid-year appropriation, yes, that's part of a new
project.
All right,
you guys will know to bring it back if it needs to
Correct.
Be there. Okay, great. Well, on that note,
good meeting.
Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.